What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TJTV podcast, only on Spotify and Google Podcasts. How's everyone doing? So, here's the deal. This is going to be a little bit of a dry intro and outro. Over the weekend, I did an interview with Mike Rossi. He actually worked at WJBR, and me and him worked together for about 5 months. And I have to say, he was probably one of my favorite guys to work with. Really nice guy. We had a lot of fun together. We told a lot of stories. And the interview was actually really good. I enjoyed it. We talked for over an hour, and he told me a story about Justin Bieber, Taylor Swift, told me his radio career. It was just a really fun interview. So I hope you guys enjoy it. And, you know, I was kind of contemplating on when to post this. Like, should I post it the day before Thanksgiving or the day after Thanksgiving? And I feel like the day before is probably better, because if you're going out tomorrow visiting your family, you could listen to the interview on the way. So I hope you guys enjoy that. And if you're going out Black Friday shopping and you just don't want to listen to people, like, scream, then you could listen to it while you're Black Friday shopping. Because there's going to be a lot of traffic. All right, so a short little intro. I'll be back next week with more episodes. And stay tuned, because the Christmas episodes are coming out very soon as well. So I hope you guys enjoy that. All right. I love you all to death. I'll see you guys in the outro. And, yeah. Let's play the music first. I'm here with Mike Rossi. We used to work together at WJBR, and he is also a midday host, a realtor. And how are you doing today?
Doing fine, TJ. How are you this morning? Okay.
I'm doing great. So let's start with how you got into radio. I know you studied engineering at a technical school in Delaware. And how did you get into radio?
Well, the radio bug bit even before all of that. It happened at my high school radio station, which is at Mount Pleasant High School in North Wilmington. They have an on-air radio station, which was quite rare when I went to school, and a great opportunity. And I fell in love with it even before I got to high school. The story I like to tell is that one of my best friends invited me to the high school for his older brother's basketball game. And we went into the gymnasium, and across the court from me, right at center court, was this beautiful setup, a table with a banner across the front and these perfectly laid out microphones with the pop filters that were bright orange, which really caught my eye, and the wires were just perfectly, it was just a perfect remote setup. And I saw that and found out that it belonged to the radio station at the high school that I was going to be entering into next year. And that's all I needed to see. I mean, I was hooked from that moment on. And the great thing is, my friend also got in on it too, and he became a very good sportscaster. He went on to college to study communications. And he has taught it for decades, which is wonderful. And I went the other route, where I plugged into the business. By the time I was a senior in high school, I was working part-time, first as a guy carrying the remote equipment into sports broadcasts for high school football games. And then By that Thanksgiving, I was doing music shows on that particular radio station, which was WNRK in Newark, Delaware, the old 500-watt daytime radio station that you hear a lot of broadcast professionals getting their first start in. And that's how it got started for me.
And then you moved to WSTW, and you were a pro. Were you a program director or a midday host, or were you all the same?
Well, I got to all of that eventually. But after WNRK, I had the opportunity to go to an AM Top 40 radio station in Wilmington. This was long ago and far away. Not so far away, really. But I became their overnight announcer just a few days before I turned 20 years old. And within 6 months, they named me music director there, which was fantastic. What a great move for me. And I really enjoyed that stay there. 7.5 years I worked at LAMS, which was at 1380 AM. And that station was top 40, kind of morphed into a little more adult kind of feel a couple of years in. And then finally transitioned over to country by about 1983. And I actually programmed it as a country station for 1 year. So a 7.5 year stay there. And after I was asked to leave, I did what I thought was the DJ thing to do, and that is, go find a job somewhere else. And I did. Through networking and just having those connections, I became an off-air promotions director at WMJJ, which is Magic 96 in Birmingham, Alabama. So I worked down there for what turned out to be only several months because of some upper-level management changes. And then found my way to Baltimore, and a classic rock station there in Baltimore was just getting underway, WGRX. Which is now called WZBA, the Bay, in Baltimore. So I worked there for about a year as well, part of a morning show, music director. It was pretty interesting because they were just kind of getting classic rock together as a format back then, and we had a huge library of active titles, really, really big, so big in fact that they made the promise of a no repeat work week. If you could imagine that, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, not one single repeat of a classic rock song. It was a interesting thing to manage as a music director. So I did that, and then again, things didn't fall into place on a permanent basis there, and I was unemployed again. And when I walked into the house at a really weird time of day, my wife said, "We have to go home. Let's just go home." So we packed up and moved back to Northern Delaware, where we're both from. And within several weeks, I got two full-time jobs. One, excuse me, two jobs. One of them full-time, which related to my education, which was in industrial engineering, associate's degree I got at Dell Tech, and also a part-time job at WSTW here in Wellington. So I started those two jobs in October of 1987. Worked at both of them for almost 4.5 years when the folks at WSTW had an opening and gave me a chance to do middays, and installed me right at the beginning of 1992. I did middays at WSTW from that point all the way through the tail end of 2020. So 29-year run, middays. With that, I became music director several months into my stay there, and a few years later became the associate program director. And then was the program director essentially from 2011 through 2020.
Okay, let's backtrack a little bit. So did you get married right out of college, like right out of community college?
Actually, right before that,
Great.
my wife showed me the way and has a few times over my lifetime. She was involved at Dell Tech, and I saw how she did a great job getting herself educated and getting herself a degree. She did it in criminal studies and correction. And that was certainly not for me, but they have a number of, you know, different avenues. And the one that seemed best for me was industrial engineering, which is a study of, well, a lot of people call them efficiency experts. They're also involved in plant layout and time management and things of that nature. Pretty heavy statistical kind of study thing. And some drafting that I had shown some talent for in high school. So I thought, yeah, that sounds like me. So that's what I studied, and jumped in on it just after she graduated and finished up very quickly. And it was interesting in that as I was graduating, and this was 2 years into our marriage, just as I was graduating, it appeared as though I was going to get that management position at WAMS that I talked about. So I did not pursue, I didn't pursue further education, and I didn't pursue further study at that point. I, you know, right. Had a chance to be a PD.
When you guys moved around a lot, was it hard on like your marriage? Because like she, I mean, I can imagine like she would have to keep finding a job wherever you guys would go, and you already would have a job in radio. So how was that? Did that affect your relationship at all? Or was it just like, all right, let's go?
Well, at first I think it was, all right, let's go. And then keep in mind too, we had a couple of kids even at that point. So it was not just the two of us. There was a little girl who was just getting started in her elementary school education, and a young boy who was two or three. And, you know, it was a couple of hands full. And then I didn't give you the exact timeline, but basically I got fired three times in 2 years. WAMS, Birmingham, Baltimore. And that's pretty rough. That's, you know, that's especially rough on all the people in my family. It was just a rough go. And sure, if you can imagine 8 or 9 months in on a move 1,000 miles away with a wife and two kids, that is, you know, that's just a bump of the road that was pretty tough. So we Baltimore was real nice so that we could get back to the area. With that, it was kind of fun too, because my wife, when we first moved back from Birmingham, we moved back in with my father-in-law and she wound up getting a job at Christiana Mall as I was getting things laid together in Baltimore. So basically we wound up splitting the difference. We rented a house in Charlestown, Maryland, which is 25 miles from the Christiana Mall and 42 miles from the World Trade Center in Baltimore, which is where the studios were. And that's how we lived for that year. So it was another year, which was okay. And then, you know, fate would have it that my programmers and the folks running that brand in Baltimore, basically what they did was they looked around and tried to hire people who had experience and a name and a reputation in Baltimore whenever they could. And they did. And finally the roulette wheel of who do we bump next wound up on my name. So that was that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, I know I talked to a lot of people in radio, and this one guy I know particularly, he moved all over when he was a kid because his dad was in radio.
Yeah.
He was like, listen, I love moving all over, but like, I lost a ton of friends, but now he works in radio, and he went from Philly to Texas to Nashville to St. Louis. I think he's in now. Yeah.
Well, that's the nature of that part of the business. If you choose to go that way, there just came a time for me where with a young family and especially young kids, I just really felt like that was not going to be the best for my family. That's why I chose. And I was very happy to wind up at WSTW finally, because I know that that company had really deep roots in the community, and they seemed to take very good care of their employees. And that was some of the things that I had to sell to my wife when I said, after 4.5 years of being pretty stable with this non-radio job and with this part-time thing on the weekends for me, that this was going to be an okay move.
That's forever.
And it turned out okay.
SDW, that's Forever Media, right?
It is now. Forever Media bought it in, took it over in May of 2019. And wound up as their program director, plowing through. Of course, COVID hit in March of 2020, and really started rattling that particular facility, as it did everyone. There was a number of layoffs at the end of the first quarter of 2020 because of it. And I was determined to kind of stick it out and see my staff through all this stuff. And I did right up till the end of 2020, when they told me it was time for me to go, which, companies get bought and costs are analyzed and cultures clash a little bit. And, add all that together, and that got me balanced.
Yeah. I also know you were pretty much head to head with the other Mike at JBR when you were at WSTW. From what Dan told me, you and him were kind of competition in a way.
I can't say I ever saw it that way. Michael usually was on a different day part than me. I guess he programmed it for some of the time that I was programming. But I can't say that I was ever head-to-head butting heads with him. And Michael's a great guy, and he's always been very gracious and exceptionally professional in any kind of interactions that we had. He's a good friend, and I like that element of kind of the neighborly competition that goes on or has gone on in Wilmington. That has always seemed to have been the case. There was plenty of pie for everybody in that market, because it's a fairly large market that isn't split very many ways because of the number of signals that are really devoted to it.
Yeah, no, definitely. So you told me you met a lot of interesting people, like a lot of celebrities when you worked at WSTW. And of course, I would imagine at JBR as well. But who did you, I know you told me the story you met. I think you met Justin Bieber at one point, you told me.
Yes, I did. right before he really blew up in a big way. I mean, they were rolling out the song Baby, and they were introducing him to a number of different radio stations. And they brought him into Wilmington for us to visit and say hi with. I didn't even know how to say his last name when I first met him. But we sat down and had an interview. It was a really good interview. His very famous mom sat in the studio with the two of us as we did that interview. It was great. And as I was doing that, my program director at the time was developing dinner plans with the record label rep as we were going. And the PD at the time, I guess, really didn't gauge how old Justin Bieber was. He just saw him as kind of a little guy. He's not very tall, and especially wasn't when he was 15 years old. But he thought it would be a kick if he and his kids and his wife and my wife and my youngest daughter at the time, who was 9 at that point, if all of us got together and went to Chuck E. Cheese. So this guy who was about to blow up and become a huge pop star, Justin Bieber, wound up going to Chuck E. Cheese in North Wilmington with a couple of other kids from a program director and a music director of a radio station. And, so the adults ate Chuck E. Cheese pizza, sat around. The children of the broadcasters went off and played the arcade games, and I think Justin just went over to that basketball hoop thing and just left-handed, by the way, left-handed, and shot his baskets for most of the time. So that was pretty cool. And then later, after he blew up real big and was in concert at the Wells Fargo Center or whatever we named it at that point, I forget that timeline. But anyway, my daughter and I met him backstage, and I said, "Justin, you probably don't remember me, but I remember hanging out with you at the Chuck E. Cheese in Northern Delaware." And with that, he kind of looked over at his manager and said, "The Chuck E. Cheese in Delaware." It was like a noteworthy, memorable part of his world that this Chuck E. Cheese in Delaware made a mark on him and his management team. That's for sure.
Who else did you meet in that during that time?
Oh my goodness. So many different people. I kind of think about the ones that I may have been a little starstruck meeting. First of which was Lenny Kravitz at dinner in Philadelphia. Is like, oh man, he's bigger than, talk about bigger than life people. He was it. And of course his music is fabulous. Katy Perry and Bruno Mars Taylor Swift and her Reputation tour at the Link. Just that whole environment that she's created is pretty amazing, and it's even moved beyond that in the last couple of years, which is hard to believe. But I've put it a few ways. She and her people are playing three-dimensional chess while the rest of us are just playing checkers. It's really crazy. I'm just full of respect and awe of her and her people because of that. It's really, really remarkable. But there are others. I had a chance to interview Janet Jackson, sit down thing at her hotel room for a few minutes decades ago, and that was really stunning. That was a I can't believe I'm here moment too, and all along, really, really super engagements. I see as we're doing this talk, you have the Golden Gate Bridge in the background there, and that reminds me of many trips to an event called Live in the Vineyard, which is in Napa, California. I've crossed that bridge a few times getting to that event, and that's just a tremendous chance to meet these recording artists and get to know them a little bit in a very relaxed atmosphere, which is really special. And if you ever, ever, ever get a chance to go and see that event, do it. They have a country version of it. There's the old pop and hot AC version of it that I was part of for years and years. Really, really good. And the number of people I met there, just incredible. Rob Thomas and Jewel and Melissa Etheridge and Daughtry, among others.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, like working in the business that we work in, you will never know who you're going to meet. And like kind of surreal. I mean, like I even look at it like I even look at it today because, like, I grew up listening to MGK and MMR, and now that I work with these guys, I'm just like, this is really surreal. Like, I grew up listening to you on air, like, every day going to school, and now I'm working with you. It's, like, really, it's a bizarre feeling.
Well, there's that magic of hearing that voice on the radio and not having met the people or seen them or whatever. That allows your imagination to kind of run a little bit, and you don't know what they're like. You don't quite understand what the business is when you're on the outside of it. But when you do come inside, you find that, you know, we're all just folks.
Yeah.
You know, the curtain has been drawn, and Oz is not that big a deal, really. But we enjoy that magic, and it's a great thing to be able to be part of.
Yeah, I love it. I just lost my train of thought for a second. No, I didn't. I got it back. Was there ever a celebrity that was very, like, I guess, not having a good day, very just, like, kept to themselves? Did you ever meet somebody like that?
Huh. I could imagine. Yeah, there are probably a few that, you know, by the time they get trotted into the station in Wilmington, Delaware, they had just plain had enough. And I kind of got a sense for that. And I kind of kicked myself in those moments for hoping that I was a better interviewer. You know, that I think would have kind of broken through some of that. And that's been a real revelation for me recently, is just watching the art of people interviewing other people, and how that's developed and grown, and how I have such regard for people who do a great job interviewing people, so that you can get past that sort of stuff when your subject is not having the greatest of days. So I kind of look at that, and when I see somebody who's not having their very best day and we're sticking a microphone in front of their face, I wish I had done a better job. I wish I had had the skill set really fully developed to interview somebody that way. That would have made it better. So I'm going to refrain from naming names at this point, because I think that's more on the interviewer than it is the subject.
Right. That's one thing that kind of, like, whenever I interview people, I always want to make sure it's a good interview. And I know there are some interviews that I've done where I'm completely out of it. And, you know, I like doing interviews with people, and I always want to make sure, like, I get, like, the basic questions in first, and then I like diving deep into people's lives, because it's the people who have, like, interesting lives, which is telling their story. Like, you have the story of what what you did in your life, which is really good when it comes to radio and podcasts.
I'll tell you what, and I wish I had maybe had this lesson drilled into me a little further. And I remember distinctly in third grade, a third grade teacher asking us to write a story about one of your parents. And with that, I interviewed my father. And I think my impression as a third grader is, my dad's an everyday guy. He's got this workaday life and comes home every night, and that's it. But then he told me the story of his life, and it was just amazing. Amazing that this man had gone through all the things that he had gone through. And the lesson learned was that, gee, here's this everyday, workaday guy, and listen to that story. That's amazing. Everyone has a story like that. You got to hear them. You got to learn. You got to learn from everyone. And that's... That was a valuable life lesson for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, my teacher's never said anything about interviewing our parents, but I mean, I like hearing stories from relatives because I have an aunt who's 90, and she was telling me a lot of crazy stories back when she was growing up. She told me she remembers when World War II ended, the day World War II ended.
Yep.
And that's like a surreal thing, because like I would never expect just to hear a story like that, you know?
Yep. And it's interesting how you can, if you listen and you piece things together, you can make these connections with your past generations. I'll tell you one story that that is giving me goosebumps right now just thinking about it, and that is that my great grandfather was the person that lugged his wife across the ocean and came to America. Did it, I'm not exactly sure when, just before 1900, because my grandfather was born in Philadelphia in the year 1900. Shortly thereafter, they moved to Wilmington, and my great-grandfather, set about doing his business and all that sort of thing. He wound up with a partner opening a movie theater in right on Market Street in Wilmington. In the 19-teens. Movie theaters were the height of media and entertainment in the 19-teens. It was pretty cool. And they ran this place for maybe only 6 to 8 years when WSFS, Wilmington Savings Fund Society, decided to expand their headquarters, and they wanted to buy up the movie theater for the real estate space. So that made my great-grandfather reasonably, wealthy. But it goes back to the fact that here he was in the entertainment and information business in the 19-teens, right on Market Street in downtown Wilmington. And to learn that and understand that speaks to me. In that, basically, I delved into this business of information and entertainment in a different form that wasn't even around when he was in the movie theater business with radio broadcasting. It was pretty cool, and I took a bit of that history in that I have my own little LLC where I do all my content creation business, and I took the name that they had used back in the 19-teens as the name of my content creation company.
That's cool. Interesting. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So unfortunately the money didn't get to my generation, but whatever.
I love hearing stories like that, because like everyone has an interesting story. Like, I'm going to go back to my aunt. I have a house up in the Poconos, and it's right on the Delaware River. So where it's in, like, I guess, Bangor, Mount Bethel area, if you're familiar with that area. So in any event, it was an old logging hotel. And in 1955, a big flood came and took it down. My aunt, who's 90, she told me she remembers carrying her daughter, which is my other aunt, running up the mountain as the flood was, building up. So my grandfather and her, or I guess great-grandfather and, grandfather and all that, they built houses on that property that we own. And evidently, back in when Christopher Columbus sailed through the Delaware, there's a documentation of my ancestors meeting him.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Huh.
From what I was told, that's, if I'm correct, that's what I was told. But that's what my aunt was telling me.
That's all pretty fascinating. I didn't know how far up is the Delaware navigable for boats. I always thought, well, about Trenton is about it. Then it gets too rocky. But no, not the case.
Not the case. To be honest, I don't even know. I know it goes as far. Like, I'm near the water gap, so I know far up. Probably towards New York, and then it's the Hudson. But I did look on Google Maps, and the Delaware River does go to Jersey. Like, it ends at Jersey, and then it becomes like a creek, and then eventually some point you get to the Hudson. It's weird. I don't know. I have to look through that again, but I do know it, like, it stops in Jersey somewhere and it's just a creek.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, every river has headwaters, and it's an interesting story. And my knowledge of the Delaware up beyond the river gap, actually, gosh, where does the Lehigh flows into the Delaware at some point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously my geographical knowledge up that part of PA and New Jersey, a little shady. And the interesting thing for me is that, yes, I grew up maybe about a half mile away from the Delaware, in little, what we would call a townhouse community these days, row houses, whatever you want to call them. Edgemoor Gardens is where I grew up, just north of the city of Wilmington. And if you're brave enough to cross the Amtrak or Pennsylvania Railroad tracks, as they were called back then, you could get to the riverfront, which now is parkland, which is great for everybody. But it was a little risky for kids my age to cross the tracks. This was before 495 was even built in North Delaware, and get to the river. But yeah, I have a little bit of a history with the Delaware River and one of the creeks that flow into it.
we had, like, I guess you could say we kind of had risky moves as kids. Like, it was a summer house. So yeah. We would do, and the Delaware where we're at, it's the clean part. So everybody swims in and stuff, not like the Delaware in Philly or, you know, Wilmington. But it's actually kind of weird because it's a safe part where we live, but a little bit further up in Portland, a kid jumped. This was like Labor Day or Memorial Day. He jumped off the bridge just to go swimming, never came back up. His bones were found right where my house was at, which was really bizarre. We had search and rescue there. And I will say, like, there are probably some points that I probably shouldn't be around because of some of the stupid things we did. I mean, tubing in the river and then like a lightning storm happens. It was just a scary situation. I remember, I'll never forget that. But I mean,
for the grace of God, right?
Yeah. Stupid things, you know?
Yep. That's it. I think one of the few times I ever jumped in the Delaware River was down at Delaware City, actually, in Delaware. And that was below one of the refineries in Delaware. And I'll tell you what, I think I opened my eyes in that water and, you know, usually you see green or maybe clear. It was orange. The water was orange. And I knew that was probably not good for me. So I got out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I could never, I don't think I could ever jump in the Delaware, like in Delaware City or Philly. It's just like the current's too, it's too fast, and there's so much debris and stuff. I mean, even even up near my place, I'm afraid of jumping in sometimes because I don't know what's down there.
Yeah. It's once you get down to the Delaware Bay, it cleans up a little bit, especially on the Delaware side. I can't really speak to the New Jersey side, although I think the nickname on the New Jersey side is the Mosquito Coast. The Delaware Bay in New Jersey. So that's sold me on never going across the bay. Sorry, New Jersey.
I try to go up there a lot, but anyways, so 2020, you left STW, got a little off topic. I mean, it's fine. You left there, you got laid off from COVID, right?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I think they just said, "Yeah, it's enough with you, Mike Rossi. Get out." No. there was enough of that. The interesting thing, it's funny. The general manager for Beasley for Wilmington and Philadelphia is Joe Bell. And Joe loves telling the story about how quickly he had someone call me to ask about my interest in continuing in the business. And the way I remember it is, literally, I was parking my car in the driveway of my home after I had received word asking about that. That led to a period, because of the way contracts are written and the like, that I had to sit out for 6 months. So as that was laid out as the path, within those 6 months, I picked up my real estate license, did the studies to go to school for that, and picked that up, and wound up beginning a career in real estate as I was starting back with WJBR 6 months later, after leaving SDW. So July, I want to say it was the July 4th weekend that I debuted in 2021 on WJBR.
And you were there for, so 20, that's like 2 years, 2.5 years, I take it?
Yeah, 2 years and a few months, yep. Mm-hmm.
What was it like working at JBR?
Well, I could tell you that it wasn't my very first time, because as we were running through my radio resume, the thing that I didn't include was that after I left WAMS, WAMS, the AM Top 40 radio station, the program director at WJBR at the time was a man named Doug Weldon. And Doug, as was the professional courtesy that is usually afforded people after they get laid off, he said, "You want to, you know, keep your headphones warm, you come plug them in over here and do a couple of shifts for me. That'll be great." So I did do several weeks of part-time stuff at WJBR in 1985. And that was when the studios were actually very close to the transmitter. It was the transmitter site, actually. Studios and transmitter up on Ebright Road in northern Wilmington. That's where the tower is to this day. So I did do that. So coming back to WJBR was reasonably easy. There are a number of people that I knew from my years in Wilmington radio that were in the building, and they welcomed me with open arms, which was just wonderful. Made it very easy. I think that they had not been hosting the live midday program for some time. So they welcomed that as a chance to, you know, grow opportunities for the radio station. And it was an opportunity for me. So I had to jump at it. It was good.
Yeah, I like Delaware. That was an interesting, station. I liked the station too. I mean, it was the music I grew up with as well. And
yeah,
today, the only thing that I didn't like, and I always say this, I was like, the board itself, just like the buttons were all, they stuck. And then like, sometimes I feel like it was just like a really weird board that I hated. I felt like pressing the cue button was so, it was so annoying from time to time.
Well, I think that I can't speak to the number of times the station moved. I want to say beside the Ebright Road facility, they moved to one place on Philadelphia Pike up in Claymont for a number of years. And then they moved down to the facility that you and I met in Bellefonte. And I am tempted to say they never upgraded the equipment. They just moved it from place to place, which is hard on equipment in and of itself. But, they just didn't really feel the need to upgrade the studio equipment. It was fairly old. It was fairly old equipment and sure looked like it had its wear, right?
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. So I was told by one of the engineers, if you could run that board, the board at JBR, you could run any board in the, anywhere.
Well, sure. I mean, if you learn the secrets of pushing the buttons just right, you could probably do it on the, the more up-to-date stuff that they have in Philadelphia. Are you, you're doing a lot of studio work in Philly at this point, right?
Yeah, I'm at WWDB, where I do a lot of production and run the board. And I also run, I'm only running the board for MGK for their turkey drop this Tuesday coming up.
Very good. Good.
Learning Vox Pro. So I guess the thing with me, like, I always think of like the worst and I psych myself out, and that's with everybody. And then like once I'm on the board, I know what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just like the last couple of weeks I was like, I was freaking myself out. And I don't know why. Cause I know how I've done every show for MGK. I've done John DeBella, Matt Cord, Andre, and now it's Matt and Steve. Which their show is very fairly simple from what Steve was telling me. And I don't know why I was freaking myself out. And then when I went to go talk to Eric and Andre and Tony Harris the other day, I felt like, okay, I know what I'm doing now. I know what to do. So, you know.
Yep. It's all about getting a little experience, a little confidence in whatever element of this business you're doing. You wind up learning that you can do this job and you can perform it, and it's great. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like I know I'm like we're all human, so there's always going to be like a mess up here and there. So,
mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Try not to beat yourself up about it too much, and understand that. Yeah, your supervisors have to do their job and make sure that the station stays between the ditches as it's moving right along, you know?
Yeah, I'll never forget one time I was doing an Andre show and he had a bumper that was playing and it was like 10 seconds and I forgot to press, forgot to put wide orb in the manual. So like, I turn his mic on, I'm like, mics are hot, don't forget your bumper. And then the bumper starts going and then he starts talking, then it goes right into the next element. I'm like, whoops, I turn his mic off. I'm like, my bad. He's like, oh, that's fine.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm sure if you listen to my show, you would have heard plenty of those kind of glitches. But, you know, you try your best to learn from all these things that happen and, you know, improve your game. That's just what happens. And sometimes, yeah, your concentration lapse or you're distracted in some way. And that means things don't go as they, as you want them to. And as I like to say, those silly computers do only exactly what you ask them to do.
And nothing
else. They can't think for you, at least not yet, but they will someday.
that will be the day. What does the future hold for you? What are you going to? Are you still going to do reeling, or are you going to go back into radio? What do you want to do?
Well, the radio bug bit me when I was 13 or 14. It hasn't let go yet. I still love the business. I would like to be in the business. I would hope for some opportunities. So, program directors, hello, get in touch with me. Beyond that, the real estate business is what it is right now. And there are a number of factors in play that make it quite the challenge. And I'm pursuing that as best I can so that I can make a little bit of a living. But beside that, you know, my wife and I are fairly comfortable. We've actually stayed at this same address that we're in, just in North Wilmington, very close, by the way, to the WJBR 99.5 tower, even though it's not JBR anymore. You can actually see it from my backyard at night, the tower lights of that particular tower. So I'm real close by there, which puts me only 25 miles from downtown Philly. Hint, Philadelphia broadcasters. I'm a licensed realtor in the state of Delaware. So when you're ready to move, come see me. We'll take care of you.
There you go. I guess that's really it for today. I mean, I swore I had more questions, but I mean, I can't think of any moment.
Well, all right. So let me ask you. Let me try and interview you for a minute then. How's that? Okay. Unless you're done. Unless you're finished with me.
I got.
So tell me what you would like to do in the business. What is your ultimate goal?
I want to be on air and eventually have my own morning show with a team of good people who we can talk about everything. I mean, like everything, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the same thing with you. I did a class in school called TV production, and it was the school news. So we literally set up all the lightings in the studio. We got all the computer and technical stuff out of the way. That way we could just, you know, produce a live news broadcast. We would go around the school, talk about sports. And I was the morning guy. I literally was the one who was on the microphone talking to the camera, and it broadcasted throughout the four, like, towns where my school was, you know, around, and that was it. So that's what got me into this business, really.
Mm-hmm. In all my career, I was, other than filling in occasionally, I was part of a three-man morning show at the Classic Rock station in Baltimore for several months, and I had the best time. Oh my gosh. I was the traffic reporter, but, you know, I was one of three voices that chipped in and carried on. And I have to tell you, I drove home at noontime every day and my cheeks hurt from laughing so much and smiling. And it was just a great ride. Morning radio is amazing. And if you get the chance, jump into it. You know, it's great.
That's the goal. I'm probably going to have to pay my dues eventually. Like, I've been in the business. It will be 2 years. It's actually 2 years. So it will be 3 years in June. So it's like, I know it's coming. It's just a matter of when, you know?
Yep. Yeah. It's good to have patience. I've, you know, sat through some really interesting periods in my broadcast career, just getting ready for the next step. I, you know, that 4.5 year period that I told you about where I was just working weekends at STW and doing a real job for 4.5 years. I won't say that I was gunning for that, that was the thing that I really, really wanted to do. Cause you know, after the churn that my career had gone for that period prior to that, you know, I was just looking to solidify my family base at that point, and that was accomplished. And then this opportunity came up, and that's the great thing. I mean, if you stick with this and keep your hand in it, and you know, you show some knack for it, the opportunities are going to come about. So stay with it, hang in there.
That's what I'm going to have to do. I mean, I'm in it for the long run, and I know a lot of people say like radio is a waiting game. It really is the waiting game. I never really, even growing up, like I thought it was just five to three people go into a studio and just talk. I didn't realize the technical side of the board and engineering. I just literally thought it was just guys just go into the studio and talk on the microphone. I didn't know the whole technical side of it.
Well, that's the technical side of it. And now I think that the business has matured so much to get an understanding that, yeah, the guys just don't show up at 5:30 or 6 or whatever and just say what's on their mind. There's a lot of organization and planning that goes into every break and every segment. And that's really important. Yeah, your talent, your ability to ad lib and interact with people, that's part of the talent of what goes into a good morning show. But there's a lot of planning. There's a lot of execution that has to take place because of that planning. And that's the thing that has fascinated me with the way radio has developed in the last couple of decades, is that there's this devotion to this craft that has become even more professional over the years, in my estimation. And, you know, that's something that you can't overlook. You have to really think about the structure. You have to think about the discipline that it takes to, you know, pull off morning drive radio every day. It's really fascinating. And, you know, you could probably dig into that even further with the folks who are doing morning radio that you're working with. You'll find out more about that.
Yeah, and it was the same thing when I went to, like, with the class I took too, because we had, I think the first class was maybe an hour and a half, morning class, and we had an hour and a half to gather stories, and then the last 20 minutes was the newscast. And I'll tell you one thing, I've gotten thrown off a few times for stupid things that I've done or haven't done. We had to get school lunches, and my teacher said, you got to put adjectives in front of these lunches. So it was like greasy pizza, or you can't touch that hoagie, or something stupid. Like, I just would make it up. And then I got in trouble because one of the adjectives I put for the hot dogs, it was called banging hot dogs, which I didn't even think anything of it. And the freshmen who heard me say banging hot dogs, they got very, you know, creative with the idea that I said, and went with it, and I got in trouble. I had to, you know, do a public apology, which was stupid. The second time I got thrown off was in 2012, when the world was supposedly ending, when the Mayans said the calendar was ending. I said, you know, it would be a great bit. We'll do our news cast. At the end, we're just going to say, well, it was nice knowing you. A kid, he was mentally developed. He got really freaked out at the idea. I had to write a sorry note. And I didn't even think anything of it. I didn't know I was going to like scare anybody or offend anybody. But he got really freaked out. I had to write a sorry note to him and his parents and explain that this isn't happening. You know, we'll be fine. I'll see you in 2 weeks. And yeah, I've gotten thrown off a couple times.
Wow. War of the Worlds kind of stuff.
Yeah. I thought it was a good idea at the time, but you know, I didn't really think I was going to hurt or, you know, scare right. anybody.
Well, you know, I guess that has to do with context, and that's always an interesting part of it. I mean, if you were playing the role of a newscaster, and not playing the role, but actually you're in the role of a newscaster and you're delivering news, and made that editorial comment at the end without making it clear that A, it's an editorial comment, and B, this is for entertainment purposes only, you know, you could, I guess you could frighten someone.
Yeah, I felt so bad. I mean, and even the other times too, I got thrown off because two kids pronounced, one of the kids pronounced Yosemite wrong. He said Yosemite. And then for Ben Salem, he said Ben Salem. And I got in trouble. I'm like, wait, why am I in trouble? They're like, you're the top guy. I said, yeah, but I'm not the one who said it. And they're like, well, we got to throw you off for 2 weeks. I'm like, okay. I still got to. Hey.
Well, then it goes to making sure your on-air talent is prepared and well-versed. Yeah. And if your air talent is not clear on how to pronounce the name, they should be able to come to you and say, well, what is this name? You know, I remember when I was an intern at a radio station doing a high school internship, and they put me on the air, which was great. I got to do like midday news on a particular station when I was, you know, high school sophomore or junior, and I could not for the life of me say the word geriatric. I saw the word and I froze, and I could not, I just stumbled across it a couple of times, and that taught me a pretty important lesson as a teenage broadcaster, that you gotta know your copy and you gotta understand the words so that you can convey them. And if you know have trouble conveying them, you're going to have trouble communicating. And that's what we're doing here, right? We're communicating.
I did a spot for one of the hosts at DB. The word was holistic, and I thought I said holistic or something.
Yeah.
And I played it live, and she was like, she was like, can you go back to that real quick? And I played it back. She was like, what's holistic? I was like, isn't that the word? She was like, no, it's holistic. I was like, whoops. So I had to redo the spot real quick. And
Yep. I mean, that's part of the learning curve. And doggone it, it's embarrassing when it happens. But I think everyone's done it. Everyone's done it at some point or another where you know, a word not in your usual vocabulary shows up, and doggone it. It's going to throw you.
if there's a word I don't know, and that's why I love Google so much. Like I'll Google the word and I'll ask it to sound it out so I can hear what. So I have to, you know, rehearse it a few times and that and it goes from there, really.
Yeah, the good news there is, you don't have to get past your own pride to get that taken care of. Google will take care of it, and he or she or what will not judge you.
But hey, maybe you'll get somewhere in the next like couple months or maybe a year from now in the radio world, and we may cross paths again soon.
And yeah, that's always a possibility in this business, because it is small, seemingly getting smaller by the day. So the people that hang in there and stay active, their paths will cross more than once for sure.
Do you think radio's dying?
Oof. No, I don't. It's wanting right now. It's certainly aging, and the generation that has loved it and used it in a way that has always seemed to be the way that it's been used is getting grayer by the moment. And with that, I think, excuse my clock ringing here. There you go. I think that what you'll find is that this generation will continue using it in a way that we thought they would. I think, you know, some of the great radio stations that were involved with or have been involved with, especially in Philadelphia and Beasley Broadcasting, like MGK and MMR, because this generation was so rooted in rock, is going to do pretty well for a good long time. And hopefully things will evolve in this whole business in a way that will benefit your generation and future generations, because I think that audio storytelling is still going to be very important. Heck, we're doing a podcast right now, right? I mean, and that's all this is audio storytelling. With that, anybody listening through headphones right now understands that there's some great value here. And the question is how to exploit that, and how to exploit that on these platforms that we're given, which are terrestrial broadcast stations. My generation may be too locked into some old thinking to figure that out, but I'll leave that up to you, TJ. That's your job. Okay.
I mean, I know radio is evolving and it's more streaming now, because you can be in California, listen to MGK, MMR, or wherever. I mean, Andre posted a video about a guy in Arizona listening to, you know, MGK. He was like excited. So I think radios will hold out for a long time, and it's just a matter of who's going to listen.
Right, and I think that it gets drilled into our heads, and it is an important element. And I think that's one of the things that hopefully we'll take away from all of this is that it has to be based somewhere. It just can't be out in, you know, without a place setting, because that's important to people. The fact that you and I are talking in the Delaware Valley, and all these Delaware Valley references that we've made during the course of this hour is going to be very important to to those listeners that are plugged in and are interested in it. And with that, I think that, yeah, the guy in Arizona wants to hear a Philly rock station or a Philly classic rock station. And that's why they tuned in, because they want not only the great music, but they want Philadelphia as well. And that's going to be the case for any podcaster, streamer, broadcaster anywhere, is to make sure that you identify those local roots so that people can latch onto that. Because folks are are very much not anchored to any one location these days. They can move and go do their job most anywhere, but they really do want to sink their roots somewhere. And usually that's your hometown where you grew up. And that's why Andre has a fan in Arizona or something of that nature, because it's just important.
I can tell you my favorite thing about listeners is whenever I'm running the board for JBR, MGK, or wherever, I love when they're like, all right, we're doing a contest. Just, you know, someone's going to call in and tell them, you know, you won the contest. I love when listeners get so excited. They're like, oh my God. Like, it really makes me happy that I made somebody's day, that they won a contest to go see a concert, or they won like $1,000 or, you know, wherever. It really warms my heart in a sense.
I can't say that I've ever won a radio contest. I know a lot of people start their radio story by winning a contest or making a request to a radio station or something like that. I can't recall ever doing that. I remember actually calling into talk shows a long time ago. but aside from that, I haven't really had that real great listener experience because, well, the way I jumped into this business, when I told you that story earlier, I had been only the most casual radio listener. I really didn't plug in a lot. Even as a young teen, I wasn't really like totally into top 40 radio at that point. I liked a few songs here and there and got exposed to it. My parents listened to the good old standard community MOR, middle of the road radio station that they listened to. The first time they ever bought an FM radio was when I went on the air at Mount Pleasant High School, because it was on FM. So that's when they got the FM radio. It was part of the fabric of my life, but it wasn't like the magnet of my life until I saw that stuff at my high school as an eighth grader. I don't know why that happened the way it did. I can tell you that as an eight-year-old for a Cub Scout troop, Cub Scout activity thing, my den mother brought the Cub Scouts to that very same radio station that my parents listened to. And that was pretty fascinating. And I liked it, but it wasn't like, this is for me. No, not as an eight-year-old, but later on, when I saw that it was an opportunity in my high school, that's when I jumped into it. So there's that. And I've probably lost my train of thought as far as answering that question is concerned. But I guess, gosh, where are we going with this, TJ? Sorry. I just think that whatever inspires you to get in here and do the storytelling, or just conveying your love of music. If playing music on a radio or a stream is still going to be important to people, that's another thing that we haven't really talked about very much, is that these days you can be your own music director or program director and stream anything you want in any kind of avenue. There's opportunities for people who are really passionate about music and really like to lead the way as far as music discovery in hosting things and presenting things. We've got to figure out a way to allow those people to share music in their streaming without it being cost prohibitive, because that's an interesting proposition these days. And I'm not sure there's going to be an easy way to accomplish that. But I think that's an opportunity for some people as well. Maybe it's going to take just scaling something up to huge measures where where these hosts can afford all the on-air, online permissions and licensing that they have to go through to be able to play a song that they really think is pretty cool and put it in their podcast. Otherwise, I guess they're, if you're creative enough, you can figure out ways to do that with your social media, tying into your podcast and all that sort of thing. And maybe it's already being done. I don't know. I'm just an old DJ.
Yeah, I mean, I think radio will be around for a while. I mean, it's my parent. I'll tell you one thing, though. I say this a lot on my show. Like, my parents told me never to get into radio. They hated the idea of me going into radio. And they told me, this was 10 years ago. I was a senior. They said, radio is going to be dead in 10 years. And yeah, you can kind of argue that, like, it is going, like, it's going in a different direction, but it's not dying. I think more or less it's going to be around for a long time.
I agree. And one of the things that I do on a volunteer basis is, I told you about my high school station a few times. I'm actually on the advisory board for the school district for that particular radio station. And in the time that I've been doing this job, I've always advocated the idea that people that are really interested in this craft and this particular part of the broadcasting spectrum is to be multimedia artists. You have to be able to do it all. You have to be able to create your own social media. You have to be fairly comfortable in front of a camera nowadays. And of course, yes, you also have to be adept at audio storytelling. So you got to, it's not just one thing anymore. You have to be really well versed. And at some point, maybe then you start breaking it down and becoming specialized in one area, whether it be being an audio editor or being on air, on camera, on microphone content creator, or whether you're directing video or whatever. You know, you can get into all of that. But I think the key is to learn every facet of this. And I see people who are really good at all of it doing exceptionally well in this business. And that's what I've been advocating for high school students, at least locally at Mount Pleasant and Brandywine School District.
Yeah. Even in my school, we had this thing called, like, what's your passion? And I've been invited a few times because I, where I work. But I don't know what to tell kids that are 10 years younger than me what to do. Like, I don't want to say, yeah, go into the business. But whenever I do Lyft part-time as well. Whenever I drive college kids and they tell me what they're in and they ask, how do you get into radio? I just say, if I were you, go for it, because don't do what I did. I started as a street teamer. I should have done internships, but I just say, just try an internship. I'm sure there's plenty of them around, or and then do promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And work your way up from there, because that's how I started. I started as a assistant. I did every event that I could, and then that led me to producing at DB. And then with DB, working there for 4 or 5 months, I got in contact with Bill Weston, the program director at MGK, and asked, hey, do you guys need a board operator? So that's how that whole, story, landed me to where I am.
That's a great thing. And not everyone is wise enough to say, hey, you need a board op? Let me do this, because that's, you talk about being street team or intern as being the first step on this ladder. Board op is a couple more rungs up and you go from there. So that was a wise move. That was very, very good. And gosh, right now I'd take a board op job. but anyway, getting started in the business is an interesting proposition. And I'll go back to my high school experience, and I understand that it's been a long time ago, But I was really intrigued with the group of people around me, because it takes more than just you to get things done in this business. It really takes a village, I thought. And you know, I have friends from right around my graduation year, a couple of years either side, that have done just wonderful things in this broadcast career and broadcast business. They've been general managers and sales managers. There are a couple of chief engineers that came out of that program. There's one guy who is actually one of the leading research broadcaster in the entire nation at this point. And all of these folks got involved, and at least one of us said, you know what, I think I can make a living doing this. And it just started this really cool chain of events that led to wonderful things for a lot of different people. And you jump into a college experience and you kind of think, yeah, that's what I want to do, right? Yeah. Not everyone winds up learning and doing the discipline that they trained in college. You know, here I am, an industrial engineer, having a decades long broadcast career. You know, it's just one of those things. But the point is, there are lots of different ways to make a living with broadcasting, aside from putting on headphones and sitting in front of a microphone. You know, that there are good ways to make a living in this business to this day. Radio is not dead yet. And you know, you're cashing a paycheck right now, and that's a good sign. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's what I mean. That's why I love where I'm at. And sometimes people tell me I should go into TV, but I think I have the face for radio. That's just my personal thing.
Oh, come on. Oh, TJ, come on.
It's weird that everyone I cross paths with, they're like, you have a great voice. And they're like, you know, what are you doing with it? I'm like, well, I'm a board op right now. I can't really do much with it at the moment, but I know I have the voice, and I know sometimes I do stumble across my words a lot, but I also feel like that's more unique in a way, because, you know, a lot of people are professional with it when it comes to talking on the air, but like someone like me who just is starting, it's just going to be mess ups unless like 10 years down the line where I'm going to be really like good at pronunciating things and all that. So.
Well, sure. You get a little more polished as you go along. Yeah. And I came along at a time in broadcasting where they came to the conclusion that you didn't need the great broadcast voice to be on the air. And that's a good thing for me, because I just never really considered myself to have a great, great set of pipes. But yes, it's unique, and every voice is a little different, and you just kind of live within yourself, and you develop, you know, people who recognize your voice and go from there. I mean, I didn't have formal training. I've never had a vocal instructor or anything like that. And it's just taking all the experiences that I've had in life and fold it all up and take it into the studio with me every day. And one of the things that I take in with me is the fact that I'm just me, and I'm not putting on airs. I'm not anything extraordinary. I've had extraordinary experiences because of it, which I'm very, very grateful for, and I'm happy to share that sort of stuff with people. But aside from that, you know, it's just this guy who grew up a couple of miles away from here, and here I am on the air doing this, and boy, this is great.
Well, that's wow, it's 11:18.
Yeah.
You've
got some editing to do.
Well, thank you for coming on once again, and happy Thanksgiving. I know you guys did the turkey-thon last night, right?
Yeah, I was over at the ShopRite in Northern Wilmington. It's where I do some of my shopping, and just wanted to go over and say hi. I was suffering a little bit of a cold, you know. Thank goodness it wasn't COVID, because we ran into a COVID problem while we were on tour in Italy a couple of days ago. So I've tested negative like 5 times in the last 10 days. So I thought it was okay to go get my turkey and you know, go over and say hi to Chris Leonard and Deanna and Justin, and donate another bird and be part of it all, because that's just a great effort. Chris Leonard does a wonderful job servicing and serving the community.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, thanks again for coming on, and happy Thanksgiving. And this will be out Wednesday. So
TJ, happy Thanksgiving to you, to all your listeners, and take care. We'll see you soon.
see you soon.
All right.
All right, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. If you did, make sure you like and subscribe on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and also follow me, TJTV6, on TikTok, and producer TJ995 on TikTok, where I do vlogs, scary content, and all that other stuff. Like I said, next week there will be more episodes. I have a lot more things to talk about. And we're going to go from there. So happy Thanksgiving. Hope you guys enjoy it. Eat some turkey, or if you're not eating turkey, eat something else. So there we go. All right. I'll see you guys later, and bye.